Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily podcast on the Brooklyn Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And welcome into a Thursday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm Gavin Shull, joined, as always, by Josh Bass. And we had a wild night, Josh. We met some celebrities.
Yeah, we did. I guess you could call them pseudo-celebrities, or very famous in that little Twitter.
They're celebrities in our hearts.
Yeah, in that little Twitter basketball world that we like to immerse ourselves in. We waited online for a very long time for Shea Serrano's new book, Basketball and Other Things, and we met Jason Concepcion, a.k.a. Network, from The Ringer.
Yeah, well, the plan was to go to, they had this 30-minute like talk before they were signing books. And it was supposed to be Shea, Zach Lowe,
Rembert Brown
and Network. And we didn't get in because we got there at like 6:30. He's a friend who will not be named. Yeah. Who was supposed to,
I don't want to point fingers, but he really blew it.
There a little earlier. I'll be listening to this so you can text me after.
You know who you are.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. All right. He decided not to come for work related reasons. So we got there and there's like a line around the block. And I think we probably should have known. We underestimated the FOH army, as any of you who are Shea heads are well aware of. It is quite substantive. And it's really like, it's one of the like largest like social media, like I guess like grassroots movement started by like, I don't want to say rando, but like not like a big name in our time. So I guess it makes sense that there'd be a line around the block waiting for these guys. But it's cool to see that so many other people are into like these like niche little things like we are.
Anyway, and we saw a lot of Nets gear out there also, which is always nice to see people was, supporting the team.
It was great. Yeah. So if you were waiting on that line, you were in line with us. In line or online?
Online, yeah.
Okay, because I heard someone else say inline. I wanted to be critical of them, but now I'm using it.
This is like the Sixers-Nets Twitter debate with the online.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to do it. Yeah, that's a good... Wait, no, I don't want to transition out of this shit. Save that, though. Maybe for a future podcast, but this one's tough. Okay, so we're waiting online for this. We know we're not going to get into the speech at this point, but we just want to see who we can, maybe get the book signed by Shea. And who do we see? But I'm just looking down at my phone. Josh starts like rapidly tapping my shoulder, and I look up and I see Peter from The Bachelor. And I know that name will mean nothing to most of you, but this guy finished second on last season of The Bachelor.
Yeah, we're Renaissance men, so we like The Bachelor, we like sports, we like the finer things in life.
Speaking of which, we saw the two hosts of the Binge Mode podcast, which, as someone who hosts a podcast, I would probably have a vested interest in saying I have the best podcast. They have the best podcast. That was utterly incredible, recapping every episode of Game of Thrones. Don't need to do a whole advertisement for them, but it was really cool to see Jason Concepcion and Mallory Rubin tonight.
Yeah, and shout out to producer Zach Mack. But let's talk a little bit about the Nets basketball. We don't want to bore too many of you who aren't fans of The Ringer and all that jazz on Twitter.
Yeah, I thought you were going to – you should talk about your banter with them.
You know what? We had some good banter back and forth. So I was kind of the first person to go up to them because they were kind of loitering around the outside. So I started a movement of people asking to take pictures with them. So I felt a little bit bad about that because I probably caused them to stay for another at least 10, 15 minutes. But we had some good talk about Game of Thrones, and they are great guys over there.
Sullied their night. Okay. So the big news in Nets them today, three players having their 2018-19 options picked up. Caris LeVert, the hyperactive hyphen himself, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and D'Angelo Russell. I want to have like a take on this or something, but it was all pretty predictable. Like, yeah, because I mean, there was just like you getting all three on major discounts.
Right. Yeah, I don't think there's much we need to say about this. We all knew it was coming. Obviously, these are three players that have a lot of promise, and when you're on a rookie scale deal, you need to do a lot to get your option not picked up.
All right, and the Nets waived a couple of guys who could potentially end up in Long Island. Akil Mitchell, leave room for Josh's joke about his eye falling out.
I would never joke about that. That is a serious issue.
Yeah, that's terrifying, right?
Yeah. Have you seen video of that happening?
Yeah, I did. I watched a few.
Yeah, I'm kind of afraid to watch that.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I'm happy he's okay. Yeah, I don't know why you'd write that in. Jeremy Sengland, who hit a couple threes in the last game, he has been unfortunately released. But
I think he'll be on Long Island. He's someone that I really like, and I think that has a chance to be someone on a team in a few years, much like Troy Daniels, another guy that's bounced around the D-League and finally got a shot with Houston and Memphis as someone who's a really good three-point shooter that also shoots it in volume.
All right, and then the last name I have on here for being waived is Milton Sing to the Tune of Lords Royals, Doyle. And Josh, you thought he might get picked up by a team on a two-way contract?
Yeah, he's someone that showed a lot of promise in Summer League. I know that a lot of Nets fans were high on him. Unfortunately, didn't get the contract with the Nets because we already have Jake Wiley and Yakuba Otara.
Yeah.
But Doyle's someone that has some promise, and we wish him much luck in the future.
All right, and then they signed two guys again. Just a crazy day. Kamari Murphy, who was at Miami and was on some of those really good teams with Shane Larkin. He's a really athletic shot blocker and someone who could be kind of a rim roller. And I'm really highly doubt he ends up making the team this year because he just seems like someone who would get in the way of Jared Allen's development.
He's a Long Island guy.
Yeah, because he feels like kind of the same niche. But yeah, I like him on Long Island. He's a good athlete. And then
Tajere McCall.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know too much about him. Yeah, so we will do our best to find out some other info, but this kind of just broke on my phone as we were potting, so we wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
Nets played at Philly last night, got blown out. They had a 10-point lead at the start, and then I stopped watching, actually, to watch the Yankee game, as I know you were as well.
Yeah, this is a controversy on Locked On Nets Twitter, and it was only between me and Josh, because I don't think anyone
else
we were
really subtweeting each other.
So we didn't really get to see that much. I guess like a couple takeaways from like a limited amount that I saw. Continue to be confident. D'Angelo Russell is going to be really, really good in this system. He just looks so at ease playing space with shooters. And you could, and we talk about this podcast after podcast, so there's no need to get into it. But you could see what that does for his passing and his ability to set guys up, and just the fact that it's so effortless. It's the whole ice in his veins thing. He like that's not a final 2 minutes thing. He plays like that all the time, expression never changing, totally under control, but somehow still just like roasting guys a lot of the time.
Yeah, his offense looked great. Defense as a whole was terrible. Joel Embiid, I think, had 16 free throw attempts in the first half alone, which is insane to think about. But it's good that the Nets get this kind of loss out of their system now. And I know a lot of the guys were talking about it. I think Jeremy Lin did. Kenny Atkinson mentioned it in their post-game pressers, that it's important to know how it feels to lose before the regular season starts, before the games matter. And then they're going to even work harder in the days leading up to the season opener. So hopefully they get that out of their system and they're ready to go when the season starts on Wednesday.
Yeah, Embiid, it was 18 free throws in 15 minutes.
It's insane. I mean, going up against guys like Mozgov, who are giant human beings also, he's able to just throw them around, just get positions so easily. And then also when you combine that with all the skill,
he's hitting threes.
He's impossible to stop. His bank shot is so good also. His footwork is incredible. That might be in part to him being a soccer player at the beginning of his life in Cameroon. The guy just has the complete package. And as a basketball fan, you hope he can stay healthy and just bring joy and some excitement into the Philly fans, into the NBA sphere.
Yeah, I remember a few days ago saying like he thought if he stayed healthy, he'd be the best player in the league within 5 years. And that's something that I totally share that sentiment. It seems almost obvious at this point because like as much of a freak as Giannis is, there's no one like Embiid. He's on a totally.
What about Towns? You still think Embiid's better? I guess defensively, Embiid.
He's just stronger. And right. Not like that like Towns is weak and like Towns can do. Towns is like similar in a lot of ways, but yeah, Embiid just like seems like again like a little bit sharper. And as you mentioned, like he's way further along on defense. But that'll be I don't want to get too sidetracked. We want to get kind of in and out of this one, but that would be kind of amazing with all the talk of like the NBA going more and more guard oriented and like wings dominating the league the last 15 years, and they're not really being dominant bigs and Shaq. Like I know Dwight kicked ass on defense, but he was never that guy offensively. Can you imagine Embiid and Towns running the league in 5 years?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. Not only those two, but guys like Anthony Davis, Kristaps Porzingis, Miles Turner. These are all these types of players.
Jared Allen,
Mozgov, Tyler Zeller. These are all guys that are really skilled players, but also have the quickness to really impact the games with their size.
And they can all shoot.
Yeah, it's incredible how talented these guys are, and you have to hope that these players that are so big can stay healthy, because obviously, as Nets fans, we know how it's been the last during Brook Lopez's tenure with the team, with the foot injuries. So you hope these guys can stay healthy, because it's just good for the league to have all these talented players in the mix.
Yeah, final note on this, but it's kind of a shame that Embiid, like, I know the Sixers could potentially be interesting this year, but it's a shame that he isn't on, like, a real contender, because in my mind, he's kind of Warriors kryptonite. Like, that's, like, the one guy you could throw out there. And if they want to go small, even if you want to put Draymond, who's so good at stymieing, which I don't even know. I don't think that's a word. But stymied is, but stymieing? I don't know. That sounds weird. Yeah,
unclear. We'll get back to you.
Stifling, sure. I know Draymond's so good at stifling guys in the post, but if he was on, like, a team, like, you throw him on the Rockets right now, like, that's a series. You throw him on OKC, I think OKC is the best team in the league. Anyways, that's some weird non sequitur hypotheticals. We are getting back into our daily series leading up to the season, where we break down each position and ask our one big question for every guy in that group. So we are on to two guards today, and we cheated a little bit. Isaiah Whitehead, kind of a combo guard, so is D'Angelo Russell, but we just decided to put D'Angelo Russell with the points and Isaiah Whitehead with the twos. So Josh, you wanted to ask, and I will phrase it specifically how you told me to phrase it. Can he add some steak to a sizzle?
Thank you for that rousing introduction.
Of course.
I think Isaiah Whitehead is a guy that when you watch him play, you can tell the guys from New York, as Barstool fans like to say, he has some New York flop to him, where it's the guys from New York straight up. His game is very flashy. But to me, he's showed a lot of signs last year where I was really impressed with him, especially his defensive intensity. There were the first game of the season against Boston, he came in with about 3 or 4 minutes left and the team was down by 19. And he was getting in guys' grill, picking up 90 feet, getting deflections, getting steals. And that really showed that he has a defensive ceiling. And I was impressed with him. Obviously, no rookie's going to be great on defense, but he really showed that he has the potential to be a solid player with his fundamentals, with his strength. And I think if he can develop that three-point shot to become a knockdown three-point set shooter, that could be really a big improvement for his game, because he's a good driver. So he has that, but he just needs the three-point shot to unlock everything and make the game a lot easier for him. So I think that Isaiah Whitehead could be a good player in a few years. Right now, he's probably not going to get a lot of time to play, but hopefully that Kenny Atkinson can develop him a little more, whether that's in Brooklyn or whether that's out in Long Island playing with the D-League team.
Yeah, we spent quite a bit of time on it, but that battle between him and Dinwiddie, I think in both of our minds, isn't really a battle. Dinwiddie's just so much further along as a player, but because of that frame, you could argue Whiteside potentially has more potential going down. That was double usage. Yeah, he could be better going down the road. And his frame, like, he I don't know. I kind of see, like, a lot of Lance Stephenson in him, and I know that's, like, an easy comparison just because they're both New York guys, but they're just both, like, they're just bulls. And you see the way guys like Stephenson, the guys like Butler, they can beat guys without, like, necessarily being that explosive. And just having a really good handle and just being strong enough to go into guys, and then you take one wrong step and that guy puts you on his hip, it's absolutely over. So if Whiteside can keep developing that part of his game and then working off of that, I'd like to see him really develop as a passer and be good at finding guys. And, you know, just playing with someone like D'Angelo Russell, it's a big, like, Bill Simmons thing. Playing with great passers makes you a great passer. As a great passer myself, that's something I found in my pickup days. It makes everyone else want to pass. It makes people start trying, like, tougher stuff, which I guess sometimes can be bad and result in turnovers. But just when you're thinking about that on the court, and that's kind of your mentality, like, I want to make a cool assist instead of I want to score every time down, that can really help a young point guard. So I think if Whiteside can maybe take a little bit of a D'Lo's game with him, he could, that would be how he adds a little bit more substance and becomes a real point guard in the NBA instead of just a tough, fun role player.
Yeah, I think that he's, as you mentioned, he's someone that really can compensate for potentially his lack of quickness with his strength and with his handles. And he's someone that I think will get better as he gets more accustomed to the league, gets more accustomed to the size and speed of defenders, and develops those tricks that can make him an effective scorer.
All right, next guy, Sean Kilpatrick. We said, can he diversify his game? As one of his frequent, he was like my main, like, waiver wire guy in fantasy. Like, I'd drop him, I'd get some points, I'd pick him up. But I knew exactly what he'd bring me. He'd score 15 to 18 points and he'd get 4 to 7 rebounds. But he wasn't doing anything else. Josh, do you Can he be more than that, or is he just a pure scorer?
You know, I think he is what he is. He's 27 years old at this point. He's a really good scorer.
He's that old?
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, he stuck around a long time in Cincinnati and took him a few years before he got his shot with the Nets. But he's someone that is a good scorer. Definitely, he can shoot a little bit, but he doesn't add too much. You can see sometimes that his teammates get frustrated with him because he's not passing as much as he should. He doesn't really have a good awareness for the game in terms of when to shoot and when to kind of take a back seat and maybe just spot up. So he's a very aggressive player, but that doesn't always work out for him. And then defensively, he just gets lost off the ball a lot. Doesn't have the athleticism when he's on the ball to really make plays. Not a great passer. I just think he kind of is what he is at this point, and that could be useful on certain types of teams. But the Nets don't really have that need for it. I think on a team like Utah, where they really need some scoring, he could be a nice fit there.
Charlotte is who I was saying.
Yeah, Charlotte, Utah, these teams that have good defensive infrastructure but just need people to put the ball in the basket, they could use a guy like Kilpatrick. He's on a very team-friendly contract. But I think the Nets have so many multi-positional wing players and guards that they don't really have a need for Kilpatrick. And I'm not sure if he's going to play that much this year.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think he's someone they should look to trade just because there are some guys who are good with not playing and then playing sporadically, and then when they play sporadically, not forcing the ball up. Kilpatrick does, and this isn't like a personality criticism, this is just like how he plays. Like, if you're going to put him in the game, he's going to chuck a lot of shots. And maybe if there are some injuries, that could theoretically prove useful, but there's not really a niche for him in this Nets rotation right now with how guard heavy and wing heavy it is already. So I'm with you, Josh. I think he could be someone who's potentially on the trading block. All right, final guy, most exciting guy, biggest stakes by a long shot, Allen Crabbe. Can he be more than a role player, Josh?
I think that Crabbe is someone who's very interesting because when you look at him, he has a great three-point shot and he can get it off anytime he wants to. And that's the basis for a big game. That's the kind of his canvas. And we need to see who the painter is going to be that can kind of develop those skill sets. And we hope that painter is Kenny Atkinson. But I'm not sure when I look at Crabbe if he has that kind of game. His athleticism just isn't that great. He's quick, but he's not someone that I really think can get his own shot. His handle is just not good for an NBA quality wing, and I'm not sure if it's going to improve to the point where he's going to be able to create his own shot as much. Defensively, I have a little more promise in him. I think he's someone that could, with the right tutelage and right understanding of angles, become a little better because he was known as a good defensive role player his first 2 years in Portland. So if he can develop that defense a little bit more and kind of become the prototypical 3-and-D player, then that's someone who's more valuable than just a role player. But I think he's always going to fit that type of niche. That's just the player he is. He's never going to be a usage rate over 25 guy.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, and we saw when the Nets first got him, we were kind of breaking down the advanced stats on him. And every shot he took, he was either off the catch or was off one dribble. And that's where he was accurate. That's where he was at his best. And I know we had Eric Gunderson on, and he was a guy who watched him in Portland for essentially his whole tenure there. He was maybe a little bit more optimistic that he could be something more than that. He could have a little bit of an off-the-dribble game into some mid-range looks. But if I was kind of advising the Nets and I was giving them my take on it, I would tell them not to try to make him what he isn't. I guess the instinct when someone's making that much money, it's, okay, he has to be a star. How do we turn this guy into a star? We got to give him the opportunities to be a star. But when you have two great ball handlers and two great creators in Jeremy Lin and D'Angelo Russell, I think it's just fine if he ends up being J.J. Redick. And you can run that guy off a lot of screens. You could have him shoot a lot of threes. And with the way the league is going and with the way the Nets are running their offense and teams are trying to kind of rig the system more and more in their favor by taking more and more threes, he could be J.J. Redick taking 8 threes a game. And if he shoots those shots efficiently, that's a star in a very specific way that you don't really see. But I think if he tops out at his elite role player, then that trade was absolutely worth it, and the Nets did their job.
Yeah, and I think a big thing to point out is that the gravity he helps to provide for other players because he just spaces the floor so well. But one thing that J.J. Redick doesn't get enough credit for, and guys like in his ilk, is that when he catches the ball off a screen and the defender jumps out on him, he's able to make that pocket pass to the guy setting the screen for him who's rolling to the basket. And that's such a tough play, such an instinctive play that a lot of three-point specialists don't necessarily have in their arsenal. And that's someone that separates a great three-point shooter from a great offensive player, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you're right. There's so many things that go with that, because if it was just running off screens and shooting, then Anthony Morrow would be someone who still got NBA minutes. And it's kind of like that. That's kind of like the like starter pack is like great 3-point shooter. And then the guys that make a difference are the guys who can develop stuff off that. You mentioned the pocket pass. I think about being able to pump on a guy sprinting at you and then just going hard into the lane and either drawing a foul or being able to finish with some level of creativity. That's the stuff that Allen Crabbe should work on. He doesn't need to work on being a dynamic one-on-one player, and I really hope the Nets see that too, and they're taking him in that direction.
Right. Were you a Yu-Gi-Oh player when you were a kid?
Obviously.
Yeah. So when you buy a first deck, that's not your just going to be your deck when you duel someone. Obviously, you know, you're adding cards in and out. That's your basis for your deck. That's kind of your start, and then you sub in and out to kind of make those improvements. But that's your start, and you need to make those incremental improvements over time, and that's what we really need to see from Allen Crabbe.
All right, so we started with a blank canvas analogy, ended with a Yu-Gi-Oh analogy. That feels absolutely perfect. All right, we added a final segment onto this one, kind of playing off the questions, and I think we kind of already like said what our answers would be, but just for completion's sake, let's do it. Fuck, marry, kill, which the NBA version of is extend. 10-day contract, and then I wrote kill again, but that actually means cut. So I would, out of these three, I'd cut Kilpatrick, 10-day contract, Whitehead, extend Crabbe.
I'm going to cut. This is honestly pretty tough. Cut Kilpatrick, I'd say.
Sure.
10-day contract Crabbe, because I'm not sure the value we have.
Based
on his contract, I'm kind of using that. You know, we'll see if he can live up to that. I'm slightly optimistic, but you never know. And then extend Whitehead, because I really think he's going to develop into a solid role player. He just needs minutes and nurturing, and I think the Nets will be able to give him that in time.
All right, I appreciate the hot take here. Josh, we didn't talk about this pre-show, and I'm not sure if anything too bad has happened to you in the 2 days since we've talked, but anything new grinding at you? Are you? I know you're newly plight yet aggressive.
Yeah,
so
you know what? I'm.
That's kind of conflicting.
No, yeah, I've been... today was a great day. I love spending time with you, and I love podcasting, and you know, nothing that really grinds my gears lately. I will be sure to be on the lookout for something for next podcast and give you guys a fire grinds my gears, but for now, I don't think we have
any. I have a suggestion for you. What about, are you frustrated with the new season of Curb, or not? Are you just happy that it's back?
No, I am frustrated with the new season.
Okay, good. I knew I could set you up.
That's great. I think that they're trying to take all these storylines and combine them together, and that's what Seinfeld was. Curb doesn't need to have everything come together. It needs to start and end with Larry having a problem, and the way he goes about handling that problem irritates people. It doesn't mean that all five storylines need to merge at the end. And I think the endings of both the first episode and the second episode of Curb have been very weak to start the season. I hope it picks up, but I think it's just a little, they're too in on the joke now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that's what we were both saying. Like, it was too much like Larry playing a character instead of Larry playing a slightly exaggerated version of himself. Like, he was like falling too much into the cliches. It was too meta, and maybe that's impossible to avoid when you take 5 years off, and then he's like, oh shit, how did I do this? Mm-hmm. And then he goes back and like looks at it, and he's like, oh, okay, I had those mannerisms, and like maybe I wouldn't do that in real life, but I did that in the show. But then you're like acting off the show character instead of like the original version where he's just acting off of himself. One final point, I'll say this to your point about the plots combining. I feel like Curb actually did do that quite a bit. It just used to be so intricate and seamless. You would never think of it as like all these plots coming together. You would just think this is the natural conclusion to the show with all the payoffs just happen at the same time. And now it's a little bit more clunky, a little bit less tightly plotted. Again, maybe to expect more was unfair. I actually thought the second episode was really funny, so I think it's trending in the right direction.
No, it was definitely funny. I think that it just was sloppy, as you mentioned, and that's disheartening to see. But I think, as you mentioned, before the season, like 5 years ago, Larry was extremely famous, but he was still a somewhat normal guy. But I think in the last 5 years, especially with him playing Bernie Sanders on Saturday Night Live, he's become a cultural phenomenon. And that might have something to do with him playing a larger-than-life character so far, first two episodes.
I think as they kind of like keep like incorporating like more and more of like the side characters, like now they have this whole like Ted Danson, Cheryl plot, and we've been getting like a lot of Leon, which
great. I'll say this:
he's my favorite character, but I almost think they're like overusing him just because it's like a great dessert. Like, he's so good in small birds, but then you overuse him, it kind of like wears you down. Like, we were talking about like how ridiculous the whole security guard thing was, like how kind of contrived the fruit oils thing was, even if it's like a funny concept. But yeah, all right, so there are some flaws. That's not what this podcast is for. I'm surprised we started talking about it. But you know, maybe we'll mention something about Curb Everyone, because it's kind of like even though it's based in LA, at its heart it's kind of a New York show.
Right. Tweet us if you like the Curb Talk, if you're a fan of Curb.
I bet everyone does. Yeah, there's no way they don't, and if not, they shut it off already. Anyways, you can follow us at Twitter at Locked On Nets if you haven't already. Josh,
send us questions.
Yes,
guys.
Yeah, Josh deserves all the credit, because I've been lazy about it. He's been doing a superb job running our social media, and we've gotten into some great battles with each other on there. Hopefully some other people will try to fight us online at some point.
Step to us.
Yeah, and check out the entirety of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. We will be back once or twice this weekend to break down small forwards, power forwards, and then early next week to break down the centers. And then, hey, we have NBA basketball again. Peace out.